Okay, I'd like to dedicate tonight's shiur l'zeich nishmas Abba Nisim ben Dov Eliyahu, Zichron Levracha, who was the brother of Dr. Saul Ban, who comes to the shiur every week. Dr. Ban is sitting shiva in Eretz Yisrael. Just want to dedicate the shiur l'zeich nishmas his brother. We started last week the topic of Ona'as Tevarim, which again sounds like a very hashkafic topic, but there is a significant sugya in the Gemara that is halachic in nature that relates to Ona'as Tevarim. So last week we gave some background information and we started to discuss who the Isser applies to, whether it applies to one who speaks not nicely or does not nice things to Goyim, to Gerim, to Rishayim, to a variety of different people. This week we're going to shift focus to the other extreme, and that is the people that the halacha specifically identifies as being people that you need to be extra sensitive to, and where the standard of Ona'as Tevarim is raised to the point where you need to be even more nice and caring and sensitive to the feelings of these people than you would to even a regular, normal Jew. And then, once we get through that, we're going to start going through the examples. We read through the Gemara last week, and we just gave very briefly what the examples that the Gemara gave of Ona'as Tevarim are, but then we're going to start going through the examples in a little bit more detail as to what exactly constitutes Ona'as Tevarim. So we'll start at the beginning over here. The Sefer Achinuch, not at the beginning, but in source number 22, the Sefer Achinuch in Mitzvah Samachay writes that the Torah requires that we act with more compassion and more kindness to the weakest and most vulnerable members of our society, right? Sefer Achinuch says, we can't be mean to Yisom and Almanos, whether it be through action or through speech. Shneamar, kol almano v'yasom lo sanon, aval kol maso masano shel adam imahem yeh benachas v'chesed v'chemla. The way that we speak to a Yasom and to an Almana, to those who are weakest in our society, those who are most vulnerable, has to be with nachas, with gentleness, with chesed, with kindness, with chemla, and with compassion. And that should be evident in the way we speak. Why? So the Sefer HaChinuch always has Shrashei HaMitzvah to explain the reason for every mitzvah. You don't really need much of a why for this. It's pretty obvious. He says, Mishrashei HaMitzvah, Mashek Safti B'samach Bin Neger, Lefi She'elu Hein Teshushe Koach, She'en La Mishi Yiton Tanos B'chal Nefesh. These are people who are weak and they don't have someone to stand up for them. They're missing a very important relative who normally would defend them and stand up for them. Kamo She'osa Ish Almana, Avien Shal Yisomim, Hayekayim. Right? The husband of the Almana, the father of these Yisomim, if he was around, the father would protect his children. A husband protects his wife. That's part of the job of a husband and a father. And they lost that. So the Torah says that we have to acquire the midah of rachamim and of chesed, and to be yashar in all that we do, ki ilu yesh k'nagdenu toim b'koach hatayna b'avchenu, v'nachos v'nachmal alayim, v'nir ezuchusam b'chol davar. We should always think of any possible way that they may be right, and that they may be, there's more reason that we should be sensitive to them, and always come up with any way we possibly can to be kind and to show kindness to the most vulnerable of our society. It just makes a lot of sense. So it's in that spirit that the Gemara requires a higher level of sensitivity in the way that we speak to several of the more vulnerable members of our society. So specifically the Gemara that we read last week about Metzia Nun Ches Amud Beis and Nun Tes Amud Aleph warns us that you have to be very careful and vigilant in the way one speaks to one's wife. That when we speak to a wife, it has to be in a more kind way than when we speak to other people. Sometimes people have it reversed. When they speak to their wife, they assume that they're at such a comfort level with their wives that they could speak in a very brash and not so nice way. And when they speak to other people, chas v'shalom, they would never be heard outside the house speaking to other people the way they speak to their wives. That's the reverse. We have to speak with extra sensitivity to our wives. Why? So the Gemara gives reasons. The Gemara says, first of all, women cry much more easily than men do. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is extremely sensitive to tears. The Gemara says that even though Shari Tefillah sometimes are closed, The Shari Dima, the gates of tears, are always open. If a person cries and they were hurt by someone else, those tears are going to be answered. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not going to let those tears go by unanswered, and it's going to cause us big problems if we made somebody else cry. So one has to be very careful when they speak to their wives, because women in general cry a lot more easily than men do. Then the Gemara goes on to, in fact, the Gemara, interestingly, in Ksubas Tav Samach Beis, if you look in source number 23, the Gemara tells a story. Ki had Rav Ruchumi av Shchiach kamei de Rava b'machuza. Rav Ruchumi, the Gemara in context in Ksubas Tav Samach Beis, is talking about how long a person is allowed to leave their house to go learn. It used to be common practice that someone would get married, and if they were learning in yeshiva, they would go away for a week, a month, and they wouldn't come home. They would go stay in the yeshiva. So how often does he have to come back home? So the Gemara tells several stories of people who took a few too many liberties in staying away too long. People who stayed away for years, they came back, their children were all grown up, didn't recognize them, you know, like these unbelievable stories of people who were away for way too long from their homes. So the Gemara says, Rav Ruchumi have a shchiach kamei de Rav Machuza. Rav Ruchumi used to learn in Rava's yeshiva in Machuza, have a ragil dava asi lebeisei kol mali yom de kippure. And he used to come back home once a year, Erev Yom Kippur. He'd come to celebrate Yom Kippur with the family. But the rest of the year he was away. So what would he do when he's home there once a year? Probably stay in shul all day. So that was his family time. Yom Echad Mashach De Shmaita. One day his learning started to pull him in, meaning he got very involved in his learning. Have Mesach Yedbitu Hashta Asi Hashta Asi. And it's Erev Yom Kippur. His wife knows this is the one day a year that he comes home. So she's standing by the door and she's looking and she's saying, oh, he's coming now, maybe he's coming soon. Lo asa. But he was so caught up in the sugya that he was learning, he didn't come. Chalash daita, so she became upset. Achis dim asa me eina. A tear came out of her eye. Have a yasib bi'igra. The guy, the husband, happened to have been sitting in a top floor on a rooftop or on the top floor of a building at the time that his wife started to cry. The floor beneath him caved in and he died on the spot. At the moment the tear dropped out of her eye, he dropped from where he was sitting and died on the spot. And what the Gemara is obviously trying to emphasize is that we cannot take tears lightly, and certainly not the tears of our wives. And if a person speaks to his wife in a way that causes her to cry, so it can lead to very horrendous consequences and very scary consequences for ourselves. That's one thing the Gemara says, why a person has to speak nicely to their wife. Second reason the Gemara says is because one has to appreciate that all of the brachos that we have in our homes are as a result of our wives. Right? That's not just some contemporary sefer saying that. The Gemara says that all of the bracha that we find in our homes is due to our wives. And therefore, it's pashur hakaras hatov. Right? If you realize, you look around and you see all the bracha, everything that you have, and you know that you owe it all to her, and sometimes people have that backwards also. They assume that all the bracha that they have is because they make money, and maybe the wife doesn't make as much money or doesn't make any money, and they assume that all the bracha is due to them. And they think, you know, they all have it coming to them. But no, all the bracha in our home, on any level, spiritual, religious, financial, any level, emotional, all the bracha that we have, the children, everything that we have in our homes is a result of the efforts and the zuchus of our wives. And therefore the Gemara says that a person has to speak with great respect and very nicely to a wife. Now what's the nafkamina between the two reasons? One, because demasa metzuya, and the other, because yo'er hakaras hatov, because she's the cause of all your bracha. So I think nafkamina is very pashut. Does speaking to another woman besides your wife require that same level of sensitivity? I mean, we have to be sensitive to all Jews. There's no question. You have to speak with great sensitivity. We have to speak with great sensitivity to each other, to our friends, with everybody. But when we speak to our wives, clearly the Gemara says you need a higher level of sensitivity. Does that same higher standard apply to all women? So if you say the svara is dimasa matsuya, that she cries very easily, well, that's not just my wife that cries very easily, everybody's wife cries very easily. Meaning that's something that's natural to women. Women cry more easily than men. But if it's an issue of, it's my hakaras hatov to my wife, because she's the one that provides me with all the bracha, well, my wife provides me with all this bracha. Not everybody else's wife, they provide them with all that bracha. I don't have to show hakaras hatov for the bracha that someone else's wife provides him. So it would seem that would be the pashut afkamina. However, even within that, the Maral points out that The lashon of the Gemara is ishtel, that a person has to be very careful the way he speaks to his wife. So it seems illogical to assume that the Gemara would use a lashon of your wife and then give a svara that would really apply to any woman in the world. So the Maral points out that even within the svara of demasa matsuya, even within the svara that she cries very easily, the Maral points out that's also dafka din in your wife. My wife doesn't cry any more than anybody else does, than anybody else's wife does. But my wife is much more likely to cry if I speak with less sensitivity to her than if someone else does. Even if she might cry in both situations, she's going to be much more hurt if it comes from me. Why? Because when her boss yells at her, when her, something happens, so who's the first person she calls right away? She calls the husband. You're not going to believe, I'm so sad, this happened, that happened, I can't believe, who do they think they are? Well, she has someone to confide in, she has someone to turn to. When the husband speaks to her in a way that causes her to cry, who is she going to turn to then? Right? That's who she relies on. That's who she confides in. That's who she needs to turn to in that situation. So the Maral says that's also dafka din. Even demasa matsuya is a svara that's dafka din in a wife. They quote from Rav Chaim Vital that a person's midos are judged based on the way he relates to his wife. And it's also interesting. Who's the Amora in our Gemara in Bamitzia Milches Nuntes who teaches that you have to speak with great sensitivity to your wife? The Amora is Rav. Now, elsewhere, the Gemara tells us that Rav had a very, shall we say, complicated relationship with his wife. Right? The Gemara says that every time he would ask, let's say, for hot dogs, she would give him hamburgers, and every time he asked for hamburgers, she would give him hot dogs. And the son, Ruchia, who's Rav's son, wanted to was so upset that he would always have to disappoint his father whenever he would bring him food from mom. So he knew to switch it up. He knew that when dad asked for hot dogs, right, so Reb Chia would go to mom and say, "Dad wants hamburgers." And that way, mom would say, "Oh, he wants hamburgers? I'll give him a hot dog." Right, and he would go bring the right food. And Rav would say, "Wow, I can't believe it, the right food." And Reb Chia said, "Well, not really, I switched up. I just didn't want you to be disappointed." And Rav said, "No, you can't do that anymore, because limdu lishonu devar sheker, you can't teach yourself to speak lies." But you see from that Gemara, it's a very unusual kind of relationship he had with his wife. His wife, took pride in egging him on a little bit, in pushing his buttons. And nevertheless, Rav is the one who teaches us that you need to be super sensitive, you need to be extra sensitive to a wife. Apparently teaching us that even if she's not being sensitive to you, even if she's not being kind and, it's not that, so very often the way we act toward other people, and this is just human nature, is we tend to be a mirror. Right, when someone smiles at us whenever we see them, so what's the natural human inclination is to smile right back. When someone gives us an angry face, we give an angry face. What's his problem? Right? That's the way people act. That's the most natural thing. So it takes a tremendous amount of shviras amidos and breaking just our natural inclination if it comes to it that a wife is not treating the husband with the greatest kindness and respect, that the husband still has to respond. And that's with kindness and respect. And that's what Rav is teaching us. And we should just point out, last week we discussed the Sma in Chosh Mishpat in Reish Chav Ches Dalid, where the Sma said that the Isra of Onas Devarim doesn't apply, or he at least suggested it doesn't apply to someone who's mean to you. That when someone acts like a not nice person to you, you can be not nice back, because you don't have to be like an Evan who doesn't is unaffected by you. Don't write the Rambam writes that there's a shvil azad, that there's a middle path to take. You shouldn't be someone who just flies off the handle at the slightest, when someone looks at you the wrong way. But you also shouldn't be someone who's just completely unaffected by anything. You have to be someone who's affected. So you have to find that middle ground. So the Sma says, if someone's really mean to you, you don't have to go out of your way to be kind to them. You don't have a mitzvah of speaking nicely to a person who doesn't speak nicely to you. He at least suggests it as a havamina. It's still, everyone agrees that it would still be a midas chasidus and a wonderful thing to do to speak kindly to him. But you see that meikra din, you wouldn't have to. And yet by the wife, it's Dafka Rav who tells us that you need a higher level of sensitivity to your wife, even though Rav is the one whose wife wasn't sensitive to him. So you see that it makes the contrast between how one treats a wife and how one treats anybody else that much stronger. So that's category one of people that the Gemara identifies as people that require extra sensitivity. The next category of people that require extra sensitivity, and sometimes we're not cognizant of this, that kids are people too. The Rambam in Hilchos Deos in Parag Vav Halacha Ches writes that the issur to speak harshly to other people applies even when speaking to children. And it makes sense if someone accepts that the reason we have to speak extra carefully to women is that they cry more easily, so then l'chora, the same should certainly hold true when we speak to children. Children also cry very often. The story is told that there was a father who was reprimanding his son very strongly in Bnei Brak, and he was yelling at the kid something mukta or something on Shabbos, and the father was letting him have it. And the Chazon Ish walked by and saw the way the father was dealing with the kid, and the Chazon Ish said, you know, the boy may have violated Nisud Drabanan of Mukta, but the father is violating Nisud Daraisa of Anas Devarim, the way he's treating the kid. Meaning we have to realize that we can't, that there's a way to handle things with children also, and that the way we speak to children, we have to be extremely, extremely careful about. They're extremely sensitive. Binyamin Palm gave me a tape a couple of years ago of his grandfather speaking about Anas Devarim. If you ever heard of Palm speak, I mean, the man was the gentlest soul you could ever imagine. Just an unbelievable individual. And Rav Palm, Zichron Levracha, was said he was somewhere and he heard a mother telling a child, "You're a bad boy." I've heard that 1,000 times, right? I've heard it 1,000 times. So Rav Palm said, "I couldn't believe it." She said, "He's a bad boy." How do you think that made the kid feel, to be told that he's a bad boy? You tell him he did something wrong, but you're telling him you're a chefza of badness, right? You're a bad boy. Like, Rav Palm was like blown away by that. I mean, to us, it seems so natural and normal thing to say. Rav Palm said that's a horrible thing to say. That's a nas devarim. With a child who requires extra sensitivity. But not just any children, the Torah, in several places, Shmos Perchav Beis Pasachav Aleph, the Torah tells us that we have to be very careful about the way we treat dafka, a yasom and an almana. Right? That a yasom and almana require even more sensitivity than a regular child. There's a machlokas in the Medrash whether the isser specifically of mistreating a yasom and almana is, and Rashi quotes, is an isser really to mistreat all people, and they just give the example of a yasum and almana because those are the most common examples, or maybe it's dafka a din in a yasum and almana. But certainly, whichever way you assume, whether that particular isser is about everybody or dafka about a yasum and almana, the reason the Torah speaks about yasum and almana is because those are the most sensitive. And it's notable that the pasuk in the context of yasum and almana doesn't say Amcha, doesn't say Amisecha, doesn't say, it sounds like that issur would apply to anybody, even to a guy, mistreating a Yasam Valmana, that any Yasam Valmana requires, even if you hold, going back to last week's shir, that Onas Tvarim doesn't apply to a guy, other than the obvious issues of Chil Hashem, right? Even if you hold that technically Onas Tvarim doesn't apply to a guy, let's say you're on the phone with someone in India and you don't have a Jewish sounding name and they'll never know that you're Jewish, so there's no Chil Hashem problem, right? So let's, and they're giving you a hard time and you want to let them have it, right? So even if you're going to assume that there's no such Isser of Onas Tvarim by a guy, by Yasam Valmana, it would seem that the Isser would apply even to a guy. The trick is, though, and the truth is, again, whenever I give a nafkamina, so my nafkamina, speak nicely to everybody, and then you don't have to worry about any of the nafkaminas. But just in Lamdas, at least, to talk about a nafkamina, is how do you define exactly a yasom and almana? The mashal, a 5-year-old loses his parents. That's a yasom. No one would argue that. An 85-year-old loses his parents. Yasom. You have to treat him like a yasom. He needs extra sensitivity because he lost his parents at the age of 85. I think most of us would probably say that's probably not a yasom anymore. So where do you draw the line? I have a friend who serves on the board of an organization that makes chasnas for yasomim. That's the charter of the organization, is that they help out yasomim make chasnas, and the yasomim have to apply for X amount of money. They say how much money they need, and they itemize exactly why they need the amount of money that they're applying for. But it's dafka for yasom, not just tam for aniyim. You have to be a yasom to apply. So they had a serious issue recently. How old is a yasom? You have a 45-year-old chassan, and his parents aren't alive. So is he a yasom? Should that organization be making his chassana? So it's a very difficult question. where exactly you define what a yasam is and what a yasam is not. So the Kaf HaChaim in Or HaChaim, Kuf Nun Vav, Sif Katan Yud Dalet, it's on the Mar Makomos. If you look in source number 26, he writes, V'afal became lo yinuk ven kamo shar adam, echad yasam ea v'echad yasam eim. First of all, he says, a yasam is someone who lost either parent. V'ad masai nikraim yisamim, this is the only source I found that spoke about this. If anyone knows of any other sources, I'd be very grateful to hear, because my friend asked me if I know of any sources. I knew nothing. This is the only one that I was able to come up with. And it's mind-boggling. I mean, it should be very easy to come up with sources. The Torah always talks about yisamim. We never stop to ask ourselves, what is a yasom? No, it's such an obvious question. So the Kav HaChaim says, V'ad masai nikraim yisamim l'nin zeh, ad shelo yiyu tzrichum na'adam liyisamech alav, ela osan tzarchan kishar gedolim. If you can come up with a more vague answer, right? He says that people, they don't need other people so much anymore. And they take care of themselves like adults take care of themselves. There are probably a lot of levels of that, no? I mean, Baruch Hashem, I have my parents and I rely heavily on them today. And I'm an adult, I think. Right? I still rely heavily on them for a variety of things. You know, if I need, I'm going on a Shabbaton this weekend with some of my kids. I need to farm out other kids. What do I do? Call my parents. Can you take care of three of my kids? Yeah, no problem. They're taking my kids. I rely on them. I couldn't get it. It would be very, very difficult to get by without them, right? So it's a little bit difficult. What does it mean? Osin tzarchan kishar gedolim. And then he puts in parentheses va'ad esrim shana sula mikri yasam. By the time you hit 20, then you're for sure not a yasam. Which is a big problem. Then this organization that makes chasnas for yisamim is only going to be able to make chasnas in the Hasidic community. Right? By the time they're 20, you can't make the chasna anymore because they're not a yasam anymore. Right? So it's a very, very difficult thing to define. I don't know if this Kaf HaChaim is widely accepted. Okay, and almana also is not so easily defined, because after all, what if an almana is... So normally you think almana is much easier to define. Her husband's dead, she's an almana. Right? What if she remarries? She's still an almana? Do you still have to treat her with that extra sensitivity required of an almana? Or are you saying, no, now she's just a regular person because she's married?
Well, isn't the whole reason because she's vulnerable and sensitive?
Yeah, yeah.
So once she's remarried, she's somebody to take care of her.
So if the issue is that she's vulnerable and sensitive because she has no one to stand up for her, no one to confide in, so then in a khanami, right? Once she's remarried, she does have somebody. But maybe the issue is that she's gone through very bitter experiences in life. That she's had to suffer losing her husband, she still has gone through those bitter experiences in life, even though she is remarried now and she's had some joy in her life as well. So, but maybe that's the koveya. I'm not sure. You're probably right, but I'm not absolutely certain. Again, these are just nafkaminas and lamdas. Just be nice to everybody, and you don't have to worry about any of these things. The Yalkut Me'amloes on Mishpatim is troubled by the double lashon that the Torah tells us of tana, of affliction. Don't afflict the yasam and almana. It tells us a double lashon, two times the word tana to afflict. So the Yalkut Me'amloes suggests that what the Torah is telling us is that even if you see somebody else persecuting Yasam and Almana, doing something not nice to Yasam and Almana, and you do nothing to stop them, that the Torah considers the bystander as if he himself has violated the Avera, as if he himself is the one who's done that to the Yasam Valmana. That's the Chiddush he suggests. Additionally, he says, when someone, another possible reason why it might use the double Lashon, he says, is that when you hurt a Yasam, it's hurting the father up in Shemayim also, because the father knows that he can't protect the child. And he sees Nebuch, his child, suffering, and he would, if he was only there to protect him. So it's a double affliction. You're afflicting the kid, and you're afflicting the neshama of the father up in Shemayim. But but he suggests that even just, which is also an unbelievable thing, a lot of times we try not to get involved in other people's disputes. We try to stay out of these things. But according to this Yalkut Me'amloes, this is not the type of dispute to stay out of. If you see somebody who's Nebuch being very mean to a Yasam and Almana, we have to get involved. This is consistent with Torah values in general. I must have told the story a half a dozen times already, but I'm going on my Yeshiva Shabbaton this year, so I remember last year when we were on the Shabbaton, we had a fellow who was a Baal Tshuva, who was a Hollywood producer, so it was cool for the kids to hear him speak. And the fellow was a Baal Tshuva, and he spoke about his job in Hollywood and all the TV shows that he wrote for. And someone, one of the kids asked him, what made you decide to become frum? And the guy said, well, I was in law school in Cordoza, and when he was in law school, he said that he heard the professor spoke about the Good Samaritan law. And the Good Samaritan law is basically that if you, I mean, lawyers will tell me that I'm oversimplifying it, but essentially, the basic idea is that if you see somebody in distress and you stop to help them, you're not going to be liable for anything that may go wrong when you try to help them because you were trying to help and you didn't have to stop to help and you out of the goodness of your heart stop to help. Roughly? Yeah. Okay. So the guy said he heard that law and he thought, what a great country we live in. You know, America, where we're not going to penalize somebody who tries to help, that we're going to be sensitive to someone who tries to help. And then the next day, he said he was taking a Jewish law class because he thought it would be interesting. He's a Jewish guy. He wasn't religious at all, but he thought it would be interesting with Rabbi J.D. Bleich, who's, if you know who he is, if you've seen his books, brilliant, brilliant Talmud Chacham. Mamash a gadol in everything. I would say gadol b'Torah, but he's gadol b'Torah and gadol in everything else also. He teaches, I think he's the only guy that's a professor in the law school, the medical school, and the smicha program. He manages to be an expert in a lot of things. But anyway, he was teaching a Jewish law class, and he was contrasting the Good Samaritan law with what the Torah says about Good Samaritan. And he said, the Torah doesn't have such a law. Why? Because there's no such thing as seeing someone in distress and not going over. I mean, the Good Samaritan law assumes that you have an option. I can go over, or I could ignore it and continue on my way. There's an issur in the Torah, lo samar al dam reyecha. You can't watch someone being hurt and not do something about it. And he realized, this guy said, that's what got me started on the path toward becoming a Baal Tshuva. Because I realized, just the day before, I heard something that I thought was the most ethical thing I've ever heard in my entire life. And then, mamish, the next day, the Torah has an ethic that's so much higher. That starts with an assumption that's higher than the ethic of the law that he thought was the most ethical thing he's ever heard. He said that he went over to Rabbi Bleich right after the class and said, I need to learn more. And over the course of many years, it didn't happen right away, but over the course of many years, he learned a little more and more and more. Now he's a frum guy, lives in Woodmere, sends his kids to Yeshiva Ketana. Anyway, so that's consistent with this idea of lo samar al dam reyecha. When you see someone mistreating a yasam or an almana, it's not a time to say, I'm going to stand by and, you know, it's not my business, why should I get involved? No, yeah, I have to get involved. The next category, the last category of people who require extra sensitivity is the ger. The Torah tells us in 36 places, according to the Gemara, you have to figure out how to do the count exactly, according to some days it's more than 36 places. The Torah tells us in many, many places that we have to be extremely sensitive to a ger. And the Chizkuni points out the obvious reason. He says it's necessary to give us this extra warning that we need to be sensitive to a ger, because gerim tend to make for easy targets. They're not as comfortable. They don't, in the religion yet. They don't know as much necessarily at the beginning. And it's an easy target to make fun of. Someone walks into shul and looks different than everybody else. So, just a couple of weeks, last week, someone walked into shul looking a little different than everybody else. It wasn't a ger, it was a Jew from birth. But the children, my children included, leading the way, the children were making fun of the way the man came dressed to shul, and the way, because that's what children do. They find something that someone looks different, that's a little bit different than everybody else, and they pick on that, and they mock it, and they make fun of that type of thing. So that's, when we get older, we hopefully control that urge a little bit more, you know, so we don't make fun, but sometimes it's easy to, sometimes we forget ourselves, and sometimes when someone's a little bit different and a little bit off and a little bit unique, so we tend to not appreciate that uniqueness as much as we should. So the Chizkuni says that's why the Torah has to remind us over and over again. The ger might be a little different. He might look a little different. He might have different skin color. He might have whatever it is. No matter how different he is, he's a Jew, and you have to treat him as such. And not only as such, but we have to treat them with an extra level of sensitivity. The Gemara in Bava Metzia, Daf Nun Tes, says that the issur of harassing a ger is the most absurd idea ever, because the Gemara says, think about it for a second. This is mum shebecha al tagad lechavrita, right? If you we're all gerim, right? The Torah tells us we gerim yisem baretz Mitzrayim. We were gerim in Eretz Mitzrayim. So for us to go and mak a ger is so short sighted, right? We were it's and the truth is it's about Anytime you see someone that doesn't fit in, we've all been in situations where we didn't fit in just right, right? So to go and mock the one who doesn't fit in just right in our circle, it's ridiculous, because we've all been there. So to so that's what the Gemara says. For a person to go and mock a ger or to harass a ger is so what's the word I'm looking for? It's so absurd. Because we're all gerim originally. Min chastinuch though isn't sure within this specific iser of being mean to a ger, harassing a ger. Min chastinuch in mitzvah taf lamed aleph isn't sure how far down someone is still called a ger. At what point do you say he's not a ger anymore? He's just a regular guy. So min chastinuch says if you look in source 30, v'gam lo nesvar ad kama nikra ger im hu levados shenichnas ledaso gam banav achrav is. When the Torah keeps on warning us that we have to be careful about how we treat a ger, it doesn't mean dafka the ger. What about his children? Do his children require extra sensitivity, or can they be treated like regular Jews? It's unclear for how many generations they're still considered a ger. I've taught in yeshiva children of gerim, and I can tell you, it does require extra sensitivity, because some of the things, there's a Rebbe that teaches a machshava class, and he talks about Kedushas Yisrael in one of the classes. And some of the Rishonim have some pretty harsh things to say about Kedushas Yisrael of Gerim. And he had to be warned in advance, be careful. There's a son of a Ger in your class. He's not a Ger, so nothing that's being said applies to him. But it does, because he feels the sensitivity, because his father's a Ger. So he's going to feel that sensitivity. So a person has to be careful. Minchas Chinuch suggests even ad kamadoros, maybe even for generations after. Okay, but that's Minchas Chinuch then says. But if one parent is a Jew, maybe it won't apply. But again, all of these are nafkaminas that aren't real nafkaminas l'maisa, because l'maisa we should be nice to everybody. Next, I wanted to get into the examples, the specific examples that the Gemara gives of Anas Tavarim. We're not going to get through all of them, probably, but we'll at least get started. The Gemara in Bamitzion and Cheslin Tes that we read last week gives several examples of Anas Tavarim, some of which we may not have naturally associated with prohibited behavior, with something that's usher. Some of us would have thought it's just a natural, normal way to act, but the Gemara identifies these things as Ona'as Tavarim. First thing the Gemara says, I'm just going to pick my order, I'm not going to necessarily go in the order of the Gemara. The Gemara says, Amachan Hashem L'chaveru, that some Hashem Ra L'chaveru, someone calls his friend by a nickname, the Gemara says that there are three people that go down to Gehenna and never come back up, that they stay in Gehenna forever, and the list includes someone who's Malbim Pnei Chaver Barabim, who embarrasses someone publicly, and it also includes someone who refers to a friend by an embarrassing nickname. So the Gemara says, wait a second, what's the whole list of referring to your friend by an embarrassing nickname? It's Malbim Pnei Chaver Barabim, right? It's the same thing, it's the same issue. What are you talking about? Why does that make up two on the list? That's cheating, right? That's really only one on the list. Isn't making an embarrassing nickname for your friend just an example of Malbim Pnei Chaver Barabim? So the Gemara says, no. Because even if he's no longer embarrassed by it, sometimes a person can have a nickname, so he hears it so much, it just becomes his name. And it becomes what everyone knows him by. So even if he's not embarrassed by it, the Gemara says, still, yared l'gehenem enein ola. It's a pretty strong statement, right? You know, you have a lot of statements in Chazal, but that's a pretty strong one, that someone is yared to gehenem and doesn't come up. Now, that requires a little bit of elaboration, because after all, if the person doesn't mind, what's the real problem? Right? If he doesn't care, if he's already immune to it. So there are four possible ways, I think, to explain what the Isser is to give a nickname, what the Yisod of the Isser is. So it could be that it's just inherently disrespectful, meaning no one would meet the President of the United States to his face and call him by a derogatory nickname. Maybe behind his back, whatever, to his face, no one would ever do that. It's just, it's a natural way of giving someone respect is by referring to them by their full name. Even if it's not an objectively insulting name, it's just showing that you're not, when you're willing to refer to someone by a nickname, it's a way of showing that you're not giving them your utmost respect. And when people want, you know, to project a dignified image, so no one writes on their business cards, I don't know, come up with Shorty, Fatty, whatever. No one writes such nicknames on the business card. But their wife calls them Shorty. Everyone calls them. No one writes that on the business card. You write, and you even throw in the middle initial on the card, because you want to project an image of someone who's a kavadika person. So the level of kavod abrios that Jews have to have for each other apparently demands that we actually refer to each other by names. So it could just be a din kavod. Second possibility, it may be that it's not that it affects the victim at all, meaning that the guy you're calling by the nickname is hurt in any way. After all, the Gemara says even if he's not hurt, it's still aser. But it could be that it has an effect on the perpetrator, that if you get used to calling people names, it will inevitably lead to hurting someone's feelings eventually. I mean, even though right now it's not hurting this guy, you know it's not hurting this guy, but if we get into a comfort zone on these types of things, it could lead to a point where we're going to do Dvarim Asurim. And in that sense, it's just considered inappropriate behavior. Third possibility is that referring to someone with a derogatory nickname, even if he's used to it, may be usher not because he's insulted by it, nor because it hurts me, but let's say I refer to someone by a derogatory nickname and someone else who doesn't know the guy as well as I do overhears it. So immediately the psichas kavod in that bystander's mind is tangible. Right? Someone thought, yeah, you have this all the time. It's you have people who in a certain context know somebody and they respect the person, whoever it is, a teacher, whoever it is, a boss or something, they respect the person. And then someone else comes who's a childhood friend and says, you know, calls him by some name. I'm like, oh, what's that? You know, and all of a sudden there's a psichos kavod in the mind of other people. Not that, you know, they're going to start necessarily treating the person differently, but in their mind, they immediately, it's taken down a notch. You know, the pedestal that they put the person on is no longer there. So that could be the Tshuva Shraga HaMeir suggests that might be the Yisr of calling someone by a nickname, even if they don't mind, and even if they're mochel on it or they're used to it. Rabbi Daniel Feldman, a friend of mine from YU, writes in, he has beautiful svarim, tremendous Talmud Chacham. I always want to, yeah, he's a phenomenal Talmud Chacham, a tremendously brilliant person. So he wrote several svarim, and one of his svarim, it's called The Right and the Good. It's a sefer of essays on interpersonal halachos. So he writes that, I'll read you the quote, it's not in the Imar Makomos, I have another quote from there in the Imar Makomos, that a person's name is his connection to his sense of identity, to his awareness of his own existence as an independent individual. Indeed, the rabbinic sages consider names to be deeply indicative of one's inner character. Rav Meir gleaned information about those he met from the meanings of their names, and Rav Yossi suffered for failing to do this. He quotes Gemara Neuma, Daf Pei Gimel, meaning when a name in Judaism means something. Chazal say, the Midrashim tell us that when a parent chooses a name for a child, it's not arbitrary. That the parents are given Ruach HaKodesh to be able to choose a name for a child. There are several Gemaras where the Gemara darshans people's names. Why is she called Rus? Because she had an anical that was Meravas HaKodesh Baruch Hu Vishiros Vishishbachos. That serenaded HaKodesh Baruch Hu Vishiros Vishishbachos. Already in Rus's name was the Koach of a David HaMelech. That the name apparently means something. It means something about the character. Now, yes, every person has Bechir Chafshis and can choose to do good or bad. But the name reflects something deep about the person. Right? That's the that's what they say, or some of the Mefarshim say, Yishmael. Right? They ask, how could you have a Tana, Rabbi Yishmael? There's only one halacha about names. I get a lot of questions about names. I once wrote an article about it. There's only one real halacha. And that is Shem Rishoit Mirkav. That you're not allowed a name after a Rasha. So everyone asks the question, how could a Hail Gatana Rabbi Yishmael have the name Yishmael? It's not really cash on him, it's cash on his parents, but let's assume they were good people, they raised Rabbi Yishmael, right? So how could they give a name Yishmael? So some of the Achronim suggest that Yishmael from the Torah was a remarkable Rasha, because he became a Rasha even though his name was Yishmakel. I mean, can you have a better name than that? I mean, it's beautiful. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu should listen, and that he listens to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, whatever it is, whatever the reference is to, it's a beautiful name. And nevertheless, and in spite of it, he became what he became. But the name typically is understood to have a profound impact on a person. So when you deny the person their name, you're denying something fundamental about their uniqueness. So the guy may be used to it, and he may not mind it, But still, it's something that's unique to him. So there are a lot of halachic ramifications to which approach you take. For instance, the poskim discuss, what if it's a complimentary nickname? So if it's a din in denying him his uniqueness, so still, even if it's the name, if the name means something deep about the person, so even if it's a compliment, even if it's a positive nickname, it's still denying something about the person. The Tosos Maseches Nedarim and Daf Beis discusses the term kinoy. The Gemara, the Mishnah there uses the term kinuye nedarim. So Tosos says, what does a kinoy mean? It's the same lashon the Gemara in Bava Metzia uses to describe a nickname. Is mechana kinoy for a chaver. So Tosos over there in the Darim says kinoy. There are two girsos in the Tosos. He says either it means a name that's a derogatory name or a secondary name. Shem Tafel, which would only be a secondary name, or a shame that's a derogatory name. So if you hold that kinoy means derogatory, so then the Isser also probably would only be on a derogatory nickname. But if you hold that it just means a secondary name, so then there would probably be no Isser if it wasn't a derogatory name, if it was more benign. Another possible nafkamina is, what if you have a descriptive name? That the name is just a physical description of the person. It's a nickname, but it's just, you know, meant to describe the person. For instance, the Gemara Menachos Daf Lamed Zayin says that there was an Amora named Rav Yossi HaChorem. So the Rishonim discuss, what does HaChorem mean? Where does that name come from? So Rashi says that he had a very strange-looking nose, and HaChorem was a way of describing his strange-looking nose. Can't quite picture exactly what Rashi's describing, the way his nose looked, but apparently it was very unusual-looking, and they would call him by the name, oh, he's the guy with the funny nose. And that was the title HaChorem. Where Tosa says, no, HaChorem is the name of the city that he came from. You can't call somebody by a physical blemish that the person has. That would be us, and that's Mechana Shem Ra L'Chaveiro. So what would Rashi say? Rashi might say, if it's descriptive, and it's something everyone could see, I'm just describing what I see, so then maybe it's not so bad. It sort of relates a little bit to the Machlokas the Gemara has, when you Ketzam Rakta Lifnei Akala, the Gemara says in Ksubas, right? Ketzam Rakta Lifnei Akala. What are you supposed to say if the Kala? So Kala Nava Chasuda. That's great if she is Nava Chasuda. What are you supposed to say if she's not Nava Chasuda? So do you say Kala Kmo Shehi? She's a Kala. Right? Or do you say you still say Kala Nava Chasuda anyway? Right? So can you? Meaning, if everyone sees, you know, she's not Nava Chasuda, but she's a Kala. You know, so. Should you describe Kala Kamo Shehi? So we happen to pass, can you say Kala Nava Chasuda? It's not a good idea to go to a chasna and start singing Kala Kamo Shehi. You'll get fired from the band if you're the singer. The Shittim Gubetzas in Ksubas Taf Yadalid says that the term that we have all over Shas, we have a term called Shinina, right? Someone refers to someone else as Shinina. So we normally assume that it means sharp one. You know, you're very charif, you're very good. Shittim Gubetzas says, no, Shinina means someone has big teeth. It's a description of someone's big teeth. Now, big teeth in Jewish thinking may be a positive thing. It may be a description of someone who is very healthy. Because elsewhere in Ksubas, the Gemara describes big teeth as being something that indicates someone who's very healthy. But so that may be a positive nickname as opposed to just descriptive. There's an interesting tshuva, the tshuva's Mishnas Binyamin, which I would never have found on my own. Rabbi Feldman has in his Sefer, discusses the shaila that he was asked was, can you call someone who's very tall by a nickname that reflects his height? And he was actually Makel, but the case was unique because the fellow's name, the name that they were going to call him was actually a bracha. It was more than just a nickname describing his height. It was a nickname that involved a bracha every time they would call him, because the fellow's name was Chaim, and they wanted to call him Chaim Aruchim. So there were two Chaims in the neighborhood. There was, I guess they didn't call the other one, you know, a short life. So they called the tall one. They wanted to call him Chaim Aruchim. So he held that it was okay. So in Shuvah's Torah Lishma, Chaim Palagi writes in Torah Lishma, it really, these types of things, it really depends on the culture, on the society, on the sensitivity of the particular person involved. You just have to be a chacham about these things. It's not the type of thing that you can give a rule. You know, Chaim Aruchim is okay, but this is not okay, and that's. He said he was asked about calling someone big nose or something like that, and he said, "Well, you know, in our culture, that's fine. You know, I mean, in our culture, that's not. So you really just have to know. You have to know the culture and the society and what the sensitivities of people are in order to properly address any given shaila." Okay. Next week we'll do more examples. I guess we'll continue, finish up the topic.